Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR Poker Cast, a poker how-to series featuring the greatest and most accomplished poker players in our industry. We are back with Lou Krieger, who will outline today big tournament WSOP playing strategies. He's going to cover from how to avoid getting blown out early, what to do if you're nearing the bubble, and the best thing, right, that can happen to you, that is you start to near the final table, including final table play. So we're going to get it all today with our wonderful guest, Lou Krieger, who is the author of many books, including The Portable Poker Pro, Winning Tips for Texas Hold'em, The Rules of Poker, Essentials for Every Game, and, of course, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker by Lou Krieger, and, of course, co-author Sherry Bykofsky. So welcome, Lou, for another wonderful interview with us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And let me add to that list of books coming out this month in June.
Oh,
52 great poker tips.
Oh, I can't wait. 52 great poker tips. And it's going to be coming out in June. Of course, you can get that on Amazon. You can also get that, I'm sure, in the Barnes & Noble all over.
Yes, Benefit Gamblers Book Club online.
Great.
Gamblersbook.com or Barnes & Noble or Amazon or the usual places.
But the important thing is that we get it. And then I'm going to interview you on it. So everybody, get ready. You're going to be hearing more from Lou, that's for sure. So I wanted to talk to you today because here we go. We're nearing one of the most exciting events in poker history here, the WSOP. It's a yearly tournament, everyone knows, held at the Rio in Las Vegas. Lots and lots, thousands and thousands of people will be attending. If you are one of those attending or, in fact, planning to play a big tournament, I'm sure the tips we're going to get from Lou today, he'll share with us, will be essential in your winning strategy. So I wanted to ask, I'm going to let Lou take over the floor and really share his thoughts on poker tournament strategy, how to win the big one. And also I want to know from him, and of course I'm saying this with a little smile, what we really want to know is how do you win the World Series of Poker? And with that said, Lou, off to you.
Well, I've never won it, so I can't give any tips that have worked for me personally. A lot of players want to know how to avoid getting knocked out early.
Exactly.
And I think that's probably a little bit more logical to talk about.
Sure.
You can't, if you want to win the World Series of Poker, you have to take the risk that you might lose it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a great hand and go all in and you're the favorite, somebody might call you and they probably shouldn't have called
you. We know.
When those hands are dealt, when those cards are turned over, there's no more skill left when the cards are turned over. That's the luck portion of poker. And you can easily lose. In fact, everybody that plays in the World Series main event will lose except for one person.
Except for one. When you really think about that, let's say like last year they had over 8,000 players. Over 8,000 players went home not winning. Of course, a lot of them placed. We noted earlier that over 800 actually finished in the money, which was totally awesome. But yeah, they went home not winning.
Yeah, well, 9 out of 10 went home losing their money.
Losing, yeah, and that's not a good feeling. I mean, you go so hopeful, the plane ride, everything's so wonderful, and then, slowly hope turns into, like, what have I done, right?
Yeah. I think that for most players most of the time, you want to avoid taking risks you don't have to take early in the tournament.
All right, so let's define risks you don't have to take.
You are not going to win the World Series of Poker on day one. Therefore, unless you have a really huge hand, it doesn't pay to risk all your chips on day one.
No all-in.
Well, there might be some all-ins.
Mm-hmm.
There are hands you will want to go all-in on. But, look, earlier in the tournament, the blinds are small compared to the number of chips everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to risk, why would you want to risk going all-in
on,
say, a single pair after the flop?
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
If you have a pocket pair of aces and a flop is Jack 4-3, and somebody's willing to put you all in, he can beat a pair of aces.
That's right.
And if he isn't willing, if he can't beat a pair of aces, and at that point the pot is still fairly small, maybe $600 or $800, let him have it.
Mm-hmm.
Stay alive. At some point, it's better to live and fight another day than to make a big stand when you're an underdog. You know, you are not Davy Crockett at the Alamo. You don't have to draw a line in the sand and say, we're making a stand right now. So if you can, to the degree that you can avoid all-in confrontations, I think the better the chance you have of lasting. There are many, many players who like big all-in confrontations. There are equally as many players who like to play small ball. They like smaller pots, and they don't like to put all their chips at risk. And Phil Hellmuth is one of those. Daniel Negreanu is one of those.
It's funny you mention that, right, because I just heard Phil having a little conversation after he finished third in one of the tournaments saying, And I didn't even go all in at all during this tournament. He was upset we finished third because he wanted first, of course. But you're right, some players don't like the all-in strategy at all and really stay away from it, right?
Well, Phil, you know, is as imbecilic as he can act when he gets knocked out of a tournament. He's a very disciplined player, and probably nobody makes bigger and better laydowns than he does. He's
mm-hmm.
willing to get off a hand
because
he doesn't want to put all his chips at risk. And Phil is saying, in essence, I am a better poker player than you are. Given a long enough period of time, I can outplay you, and I will grind you away slowly but surely. If I want to stand here and slug it out with you, you have the chance of landing a lucky punch and knocking me out.
Right.
Phil's perspective, he is far better off not taking the big risk and just trying to grind the other player away. Now, if you or if I were at the final table and we're heads up, just the two of us left, and our opponent is Phil Ivey or our opponent is Doyle Brunson or any of a number of named players, we would be far better off at that point taking a chance on landing a knockout punch because those guys are better players than we are, and if you play long enough, they've got a nearly unbeatable edge.
Right. I understand that. So you're saying that in the first days, playing in a survival mode. Would you like to expand upon what a survival mode looks like to a poker player?
Yeah, survival mode is don't push for large portions of your chips. One pair hands, no matter how good they look, and even two pair hands. Be careful if there's a straight pop out there. Be careful if there are three suited cards out there. Try not to commit for all your chips unless you have far the best of it.
Mm-hmm. And are certain, by the way. Well, that's wonderful. Is it possible for players to brush up on certain aspects of their game? At this stage, where we're nearing the WSOP, we're just a month or so away, if players wanted to sort of give themselves a crash course, a refresher, or a new learning, what do you recommend for them?
I recommend they play No Limit Hold'em. And, maybe they should play online.
Mm-hmm.
And just see how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Just see how it feels to play and throw away hand after hand after hand.
Yeah, get used to folding, right?
Yeah, it may pay to go down to their local casino and play in a No Limit tournament. Well, it's important to learn how to fold and get rid of hands that are in danger, because you're going to have to do that at the World Series if you want to survive day one and day two.
Yeah.
Most of the players who are eliminated early will have taken big risks they really didn't have to take. Now,
mm-hmm.
some that are eliminated early will be players who took big risks when they had way the best of it, and somebody caught a miraculous card, and you know what?
Oh, yeah.
There's just no defense.
The miracle queen.
there's no defense against the miracle queen the miracle deuce of clubs or any other miracle card for somebody. So
if that
happens, you're doomed. I've seen great players sheepishly slinking out of the tournament on day one.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
You know, they just flopped a big hand
and lost
with it. Yep.
You know, I'll tell you, we are going to be, as I mentioned earlier, at the WSOP. Go look for Annie Jennings. And we're going to have a bad beat. Come tell us your story. So if any of my players, that is all my listeners, you're going to be my players now. You're in my family. Welcome aboard, everyone. If you experience, you know, you're knocked out, come tell us your story. We'd love to hear from you. It'll be fun, and it'll help ease the pain a little bit, too. Don't you think, Lou?
Well,
just being able to talk about it.
I think you're a much sweeter person than I am because you're doing it for free. If anybody wants to tell me a bad beat story, they have to pay me.
Well, that's because you're going to analyze it for them, and you're going to give them some really good pointers, so that's good. There's value in that one.
How are we going to know who Annie Jennings is at the World Series of Poker?
That's a good question. We're going to have to
see 6,000-7,000 people walking around there.
Well, my favorite color is orange, so if you see a gorgeous... And I mean, I'm kidding. Maybe I'll try to wear my signature color, orange. We'll have to decide. Keep listening to the podcast, and I'll tell you what I'm wearing. But, you know, I will try to make myself known. Maybe I'll get a T-shirt with my name on it or something. Fun, Lou. Like, come up with something for it.
A hat or a sign?
Something, a hat. You know,
get one of those little signs on a stick that tour guides carry.
I may get a bright orange, you know, hat, one of those hats, those visor hats, baseball-type hats, bright orange with Annie Jennings PR Poker Cast, so watch for that. All right, and then try to hook up with me, and I'll give you a nice interview. It's going to be on the air daily, Lou. We're going to be broadcasting daily, so at all hours of the day, people who are following the tournament can come on, get some updates from us, listen to our interviews, and of course, Lou, you and I plan to connect there, and you'll be happy to give us interviews on how the games are going as well.
I would love to do it.
Wonderful. So, back to our winning strategy. What happens if you're approaching bubble boy status? How do you avoid being the bubble boy, that is the one who goes out right or near the bubble?
That's always fun. Here's what happens near the bubble. First of all, everybody slows down and plays almost nothing.
Yeah.
People that are near broke are looking around to see who has fewer chips than they do and is likely to be eliminated before they are, so they get into the pay zone. There's two things going here. If you have a reasonable amount of chips, you want to raise when you're approaching the bubble because everybody's going to fold. Nobody wants to be eliminated without making the money when they're that close to it. So if you can afford to lose a pot, you have a great opportunity to steal. You can rob them blind near the bubble. If you really want to get into the money and then take your chances afterwards, and that's what happens usually, everybody slows down. Once everyone is in the money, they start playing maniacally because some large number of places get the same amount,
so what the heck, right?
What the heck, you know, you don't have a dominating stack of chips, and you want to make it up the pay ladder, and how do you do that? You take some risks, and, you know, last year the 873rd through 775th received the same amount of money. So that's
really
a lot of, that's about 50 people getting the same payout. So if you're low on chips, the only way you're going to reach the next rung on the pay ladder is to outlast 50 players. You have to take some chances, and that's what they do.
That's right. So really, tournament strategy is very interesting. This is where it's, you know, knowing how to play at various levels of the tournament.
It changes all the time.
It changes all the time.
Mm-hmm. I think some great books on tournament strategy are the Dan Harrington series.
Okay.
His three books on tournament poker. I think those are just terrific. And you just have to realize that tournament strategy is changing all of the time. Survive early. As the blinds escalate and become a bigger portion of your stack of chips, you then have to take more risks than other players. When you
right.
get near the bubble and everybody tightens up incredibly to the point that they're almost not playing anything, then you have to make a choice. Am I going to tighten up with them and inch my way onto the bottom rung of the pay ladder where there'll be 50 other players with me?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to use that point where everyone's tightened down to rob them blind, to raise every hand and take the pot?
Rob the blinds blind.
Rob the blinds blind.
Rob everybody else blind.
People are just hanging on by a thread, and you see that they are playing to make that pay ladder. That's their immediate goal. They are going to surrender their blinds to you.
Absolutely. Now, I have a question for you. I don't know. Do you have any idea how many hands will average speaking, be played in this entire event? I know you didn't sit there and count, but any ideas how many hands are played per day? Generally, should people be thinking, wow, I'll be playing at least 400 or 500 hands today?
Oh, let's see. If you played, say, 33 hands an hour and you played 12 hours, that's almost 400 hands.
So 400 hands. You know, sometimes I like the thought where, okay, out of 400 hands, you know, I want to play select hands, so keep in mind. See, this is how I like to play in terms of calming myself down and not feeling so like I have to play
well,
something.
Well, if you want to do it in terms of numbers, suppose you play, how many hands did we say we're going to play a day? 400? Yeah.
All right, terrific. Now, one more. Is there anything else you'd like to share? Like for example, you know, I know that playing pocket pairs and playing king kings, these can be lethal hands, right?
They can be lethal hands because they're good hands, and you are not going to lose unless you're down to almost no chips and you have to play the hand. You're not going to lose with a bad hand because you're not going to play it. You're going to play your pocket pairs of aces, and if you play 400 hands a day, you figure to get pocket aces a little less than twice, and the same with pocket kings, and the same with pocket queens. So you figure to have six really big pair during that day. But they're not going to win all the time. And what you need to know is that when they lose, you don't want to lose everything on that one hand.
Right, so this is one of those times that don't overvalue top pair.
Don't overvalue ace-king. Don't overvalue anything can hurt you.
Yeah.
You know, one of the old adages, I think T.J. Cloutier said it, and he said, never go broke in an unraised pot.
Interesting.
And what he's saying is that suppose you had pocket aces and, you know, in the big blind, and you know, four or five people call, and you don't raise.
That's crazy.
And
then you deserve to lose, actually, right?
The flop is some horrible flop.
Yeah, you're up against two.
And yet somebody flops a set. What TJ is saying is that if the flop wasn't raised high enough to drive out mediocre hands,
right?
You won't know when you're beaten. If
that's
I
right.
make a raise before the flop of my aces and you call,
you know I have something.
And you've got, yeah, I know you have something. So, so the flop is 7-5 deuce. I know that you don't have 7-5 in your hand
or
pair of fives or something like that.
Sure.
But if I
unless
let you
I'm,
in
unless
cheaply,
I'm Mike the Mouse, but
yeah, or Mike the Maniac. Unless you're Mike the Maniac.
Only kidding, Mike.
Mike.
You're absolutely right. That's the value of raises. You've got to find out where you're at. That's essential.
Find out where you're at. You've got to drive out people that might otherwise get lucky.
You know, I've got to tell you,
somebody can flop a set, and you can lose with your aces.
And you have no clue
what they have because you didn't raise, and therefore you didn't define your opponent's hand.
Exactly. And you know what? Those little fours, I always fold pocket fours, by the way. Anybody who plays with me will know that. And I did that once, and it flopped two fours. I figured, oh, well, I can't worry about that because I hate those little pairs. So if somebody had really raised me enough so that I felt, you know what, I'm not going to take a chance on these little baby fours, I'd be out too. But what, but that could have been the hand. If I had called, I would have gotten my quads and knocked
and
the aces away.
On the other hand, if you're heads up with somebody, you're heads up at the final table and you have pocket fours, that's a huge hand.
That's a different story, right? Heads up, But if I were allowed to limp in, sure, I'd limp in. What the heck? But I'm certainly not going to take these pocket fours, you know, much further.
That's what pocket fours are for. They are made to seal a flop for one bet, and you will have no trouble playing them expertly. You're either going to make a set, and then question is, how do I extract the most money I can from my opponents? Or you're going to make nothing. There'll be three cards bigger than yours on the board, and you'll throw your cards away if anyone bets.
You know, we have a few minutes, and what I'd like to do is just go ask you two questions. I love what you just said. Yeah, you do flop your set, and you want to extract the most money possible. So I want to go there for a second. And I also want to go to trapping. Because we talked earlier, you said with the aces, if you don't raise when you've got aces and everybody's limped in, you know you're messed up because you don't know what you're playing against. Now, some people would view that as a trapping strategy. Do you want to review trapping strategy and maybe use that as an example? Everybody's limped to you. You're sitting there with pocket aces. If you wanted to trap, thinking, oh, all these people want to play, let's see what happens. How would you narrow the field but still trap?
Well, you make a small raise. And you make a small raise so that people think you have a mediocre hand and they'll call. Except for those, what you want to do under those circumstances is you want to slice the pie in such a way that those who have absolutely nothing fold, and those who have hands that could become second best hands, like ace queen or ace king, to your pocket aces, will call. That's where you want to create the wall that separates the opponents into two camps. So that's the kind of trapping you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's another kind of trapping where, let's say you're heads up. Let's say you're heads up on the flop and the flop is ace, queen, four, and there are three different suits. You don't have to worry about a flush. You don't have to worry about a straight. You've got a set of aces. You are hoping your opponent has ace-king. If he has ace-queen, it's great because then he will have made two pair and you'll have a set of aces, and then you check hoping they'll bet. That's a trap too. Or you can bet a small amount of money hoping that your opponent, who's a savvy player, will say, oh, making a minimal raise, he's trying to find out where he's at.
True.
I'll show him where he's at. He's got nothing. I've got aces and queens, and that player raises, and then you re-raise,
and then everybody's all in.
And everybody's all
in.
How
it goes,
and
you know,
that's him.
Very predictable.
And you know what? That's a hand, if he had two pair heads up, like ace, if he had ace-queen and the flop was ace-queen-four, or worse, if he flopped a set of queens, that's a hand he is bound to go broke on.
Absolutely.
There's absolutely nothing he can do to prevent it. He is never going to throw away a set of queens. Never, ever. Mm-hmm. And he shouldn't.
And yet
he can't win.
Yeah, I know. And then
you just
head out and see the sights of Vegas or whatever. Track down
heads
any
up in the World Series of Poker, he'll get eliminated in second place, but he'll win over $5 million.
Yes, it heads up, absolutely.
And how bad are consolation prizes?
That's right, it's not bad. I totally hear you. Well, Lou, you have been just another delight. You provided us with an amazing experience today, and I want to thank you so much. You did a great job. Everyone can reach Lou Krieger at loukrieger.com, which is LOWKRIEGER.com.
It's LOU. You said LOW.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good catch.
That would make me Low Krieger.
I am so sorry. So here we go. Lou. LOW. No.
LOU.
LOU. All right, I'll edit that out. If I don't edit, everyone just enjoy the pun. LOU. See, I'm looking at all these W's around here. KRIEGER, loukrieger.com. Lou, you also have a blog. Would you like to tell us it's the address of the blog as well as what we can find there?
I do have a blog. It's at http://. LouKrieger.blogspot, one word, BLOGSPOT.com. And what you'll find there is my commentary on a lot of stuff in the goings-on in the world of poker. I talk about the UIGEA and the trade war between the United States and Antigua that has to deal with online gaming.
Really?
And, yeah.
Fascinating information.
There's also some poker content there occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to keep up with the world of poker, go to the blog. If you look at the May 12th issue, there was something going around among all the bloggers called the 7 Things About Me blog chain. So I got tagged with it, and there are 7 things about me that I talked about.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us. We do appreciate it. And of course, our listeners can now visit our site, which is AnnieJenningsPRPokerCast.com. That's AnnieJenningsPRPokerCast.com. As you can tell, I'm also in the publicity business. I like to say publicist by day, poker player by night. So there you go. We're building up that site to have lots of contributing articles and tip series. Be sure you sign up for a tip series. Be sure to buy some product. Go to our superstore. And we're developing a great site, a resource site for all our wonderful players. So that's AnnieJenningsPRPokerCast.com. And Lou, I am very sorry to have to let you go.
Yeah, I'm sorry to take leave of you, too. I love doing the podcast with you, and anytime you want to do this again, just let me know.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Our crowd clamors for you, so you will definitely be back. And everyone, we'll see you at the WSOP or watch for us on camera.
Okay, well, you'll be at the WSOP. I'll be out there, too. So,
perfect.
Clamoring crowd who's listening, you can find Annie Jennings at the WSOP.
Yeah.
Wearing an orange hat, you can find me. I don't know what I'll be wearing, but
we're going to have to figure that out and let people know.
Figure that out. That's right.
Well, what's your favorite color?
My favorite color is navy blue.
Well, navy blue is not going to stand out. We got to kick that one up a notch.
Okay, I'll have to get maybe bright red.
We'll let our listeners know before the tournament begins with another podcast here about what you'll be wearing. Hey, that's a first. What are you going to be wearing at the WSOP?
Probably shorts and never a pair of socks.
Yeah.
And whatever I'm comfortable in.
And I'll tell you, it's going to be hot there, right?
But you know, as you go from poker room to poker room, and even from one section of the poker room to another, you wind up with some places that are boiling hot, some places just right, some places that are ice freezing cold.
Sure.
You have to carry a little light jacket with you.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Well, there we go. So thank you very much, Lou. You've been a pleasure again, and we'll see everyone next time.
Thank you very much. Great to be here. Talk to you later.